And welcome back here, folks, to the Poetry Show on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. Broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, our guest today is Tom Donlan, a celebrated local poet here, and recently published a collection of poems going way back, apparently, 30 years, he says, some of them, called Peregrine. And it's, what's the press here?
Franciscan
University of Steubenville is the publisher. Let me turn on your mic there. Hi, Tom. And we'll try again. Okay. And Mr. Cucurini, known as Mike Diesel, also on the also in here today with me. And
morning, everybody.
I'm sorry to make fun of you, but I just can't help myself.
What?
Yeah. What?
Huh?
And so, Tom, if assuming after having listened to this broadcast here, the word spreads like wildfire around town as to I got to have a copy of that book of poetry. Can they come into the bookstore here and get a copy, or what are they going to have to do?
Well, Kendra will put copies in there for sale for $10. But
yeah,
I guess just people are telling me, why are you giving these away? You affirm yourself, sell them.
Yeah, I know. See, that you're just like a guy that's been working for wages too long. That's what happens. See, in this, you don't have the right business mentality. Apparently, yeah. I don't know, but I mean, for example, I need to incorporate this whole thing, and I haven't done it yet because I've been doing all this other stuff. So, I understand the, you know, what happens. But anyway, why don't you treat us to another selection from this book? It's been very good so far.
Well, I'll switch to some less depressing poems and talk about kid poems. As I said, I've got a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
And this one's called Blueberry Pie. The wood stove seemed to devour hardwood this winter. We could not keep warm when it was 3 degrees outside for a week. My wife is concerned because Abigail's lips were blue. No matter how many logs I jammed into the stove, the poor girl's lips were blue. She seemed just fine with her merry brown eyes and red cheeks. She skipped about the house and did not complain of the cold. But we bundled her up just the same. It was a mystery, her blue lips, until late one afternoon when the refrigerator door slammed. All right, my wife said, who ate the blueberry pie?
Yeah. Ooh. Really, it wasn't really her, was it? It was.
That had clear empirical evidence that the investigators had decided that it was in fact her.
I was about to, you know, frankly, I was about to hire a lawyer for her there, but but apparently not, huh? She was business.
We could get that that fictitious Southern lawyer that you and I talk about all the time that would come in and say, you know, I believe it's pure speculation that it was in fact Abigail eating the blueberry. It was her friend, Lisa. Oh, forgive me. You cannot see Lisa. She is in fact invisible.
The dog. The dog ate the blueberry pie and then licked my face.
Yes, right. Yes, exactly.
One of those. You know, but yeah. Yeah. That's a kid moment there. That's for sure.
Big time.
You know.
It's a fun one too.
Let's do another one.
Yeah.
This is called Dylan Takes the Floor, and actually, Sonia highlighted this one in her review in the Weekender. At 10 months, he is too heavy, some think, to walk this soon. He is a doughboy in diapers. But with one chubby hand, he grips the couch end and rises. His cheeks are pomegranates. He stands on thighs thick as those on T-Rex and growls. He shows a row of 4 dangerous teeth. Then, with blue eyes indifferent, he flings aside a stuffed bear. With arms ahead, he crosses the room, sure-footed as Frankenstein's monster, then plops down. But soon he is up, fisting a bottle of milk. With head back and bottle to his lips, he is Louis Armstrong, reaching the high notes.
Wow.
But my dad was a portrait painter, a very gifted man, and he painted portraits of all of his kids. So I've tried to do that with words. And I've got poems about all my kids.
See, at 10 months, he's too heavy, some think, to walk this soon. But he did. But he did walk at 10 months.
He did.
A doughboy in diapers. Mm-hmm. So, can he sing?
He's. Let's put it this way: my father was the artist, right?
Okay.
His father was a boxer.
Okay.
In Boston. It's almost like generational opposites. My two sons are huge weightlifter, kickboxer, macho guys.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha. All right. Interesting. How do they feel about, how does he feel about this poem?
Well, I think that he hasn't really commented, but he's more into macho things.
Oh, yes, I see. Okay, all right.
I don't need your poetry. Yeah. Let me tell you something about poetry, Dad. Brother, let me tell you something, brother.
I got you. But there's a record here for whenever, you know.
Right, I know. Well, yeah, there'll be a point where... the point where it'll happen, that's for sure. On the question, now this is a no particular form here you had in mind. It looks fairly open. Can we do another formal one?
Sure.
Pick a...
this is... I'm not sure it's a form. It's a rhyming meter poem. It's called Staunton Parkersburg Turnpike, Winter 1862. It's just a reference to the Civil War. I'm propped against a naked maple tree, a wounded man abandoned in a field. Some time ago, beneath a snowy sea, my gun and shifting tracks were sealed. A mute platoon of pines salutes the sky. The silent subjects here are bound to stay with me. Birches bow and sigh, deferring to the wind and icy ground. A solitary spruce accepts a screen of powdered camouflage that lights along its limbs and coaxes them to lean in quiet homage to insistent rites. Gray denuded hardwood stands invite an oak with rusty leaves still clinging on to help them filter out the light. A chill rolls in with dark and day is gone. I'm cuddled in a comforter of snow. An aching heat in my upper half has not let go. Propped on my bed, I know its twisted branches are my epitaph.
Oh, wow. What's the name of this one?
It's Staunton Parkersburg Turnpike. I think I just probably renamed it once I moved to West Virginia. And
stopped in Parkersburg.
Staunton or Stanton.
Oh, Stanton.
Staunton Parkersburg Turnpike.
Oh, there it is. Page 8. Okay, I was listening.
Yeah,
to
it's
I want to look at the stanza.
It sounds like the resignation of a soldier that knows that he's been left behind and dying. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
red badge of courage type. Thing.
Yeah. Again, I mean this. The poems cover. Great things in life. I mean, come almost like Neruda talking about how wonderful rain is and then what rain can do. That's right, yeah. But there's war poems, disgusting things that we do to each other. And anyway, just a selection of different things.
So you have a military background yourself?
I did. I got drafted at the end of the Vietnam era and joined the Navy.
Oh, okay. Ooh. All right.
So I spent 4 years in the Navy, and in fact, I was in Sri Lanka.
Wow.
As part of a naval assignment, you mean?
Just the big American presence, yeah. You know, pulling into ports all over the place. Indian Ocean, Mediterranean, Caribbean.
Wow. and propped up against a naked maple tree.
Well, twisted. You know, I know it's twisted branches are my epitaph. I thought that was really, that kind of really affected me. So,
when did you write that one? Eight. Is that an old poem?
That's an older one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one about the Iraqi war, but again, it's just the perspective of a dead Iraqi soldier.
Right. You want to do that one?
Sure.
Okay.
An Iraqi soldier. There he lies, lifeless at dusk, his trivial helmet blown away, his body humped over a berm, his sand-plastered face sideways on an outstretched, pointing arm, his eyes horrified. Shells explode. This is not his war. No match for the coalition. He holds his side, his olive drab, blackened with blood. His stiffening arm points eastward, beyond smoke curling from the hatch of a tank, past the glow of Baghdad, across the desert of his ancestors, over the ancient mountains of Asia, across the Pacific, beyond a boy in red shorts making sandcastles on the beach in San Francisco, beyond the girl in Topeka, Kansas, playing hopscotch, past a teen at the salad bar in Dayton, Ohio, reaching for tongs, her Sunday skirt pulled against her thighs, toward steps of the Pentagon, where a reporter scratches his neck before the briefing on a breezy day in the tidal basin, where branches of cherry trees explode into bloom.
Wow. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I was in an elevator and people were all talking about how the cherry blossoms were blooming. And I just was thinking to myself, you know, we're enjoying all this stuff, but there are people.
Yeah,
right. Right. That.
Are there any cherry blossoms in Iraq? I don't know.
Don't know that that would be the climate.
I don't either. I'm just wondering whether. I remember it was it was an interesting theme in what was that movie that had Tom Cruise and it had a Japanese actor. I can't remember his name. It was called The Last Samurai or something like that. Anyway,
it was called The Last Samurai. Yeah, it wasn't something like that. It was called The Last Samurai.
What was the Chinese actor that was in that?
I don't know.
He's very famous over there.
Actually look that.
But
up,
in any so. Event, you know, he has this. Lifelong aspiration to find the perfect cherry blossom. Even though he was a warrior and all that, he thought that this concept of beauty in the midst of horror was one that one of the themes of the movie, actually. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of war poetry, right? I mean, actually, there's waves of it, I suppose, you know, when there's been big conflicts. And some of it is, well, a lot of it actually is sort of a little bit along the lines of what you've done here. Because it's the experience of being in that situation or that degree of either terror or complete mobilization, you know, I remember reading Wilfred Owen's poetry from World War One, which kind of had that quality to it a little bit. And Robert Graves, I think he wrote, you know, quite a bit, they were partners or buddies of some sort, right? I think. There's a kind of war poetry, how do you have in your own mind, you view it as like a separate category of poems? I mean, is that a certain kind of mentality you have to get into to put yourself there, or just you've known soldiers and been one, so therefore?
Well, again, I kind of wimped out in the Vietnam era and joined the Navy to avoid that.
Sure.
Yeah. I know a guy now that was a medic in Vietnam, and he has gone around the country to 19 grave sites. of guys he wasn't able to save.
Oh my God! Wow.
And it just amazes
stayed with
me.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just I don't know if it's a separate category, but it's definitely a very compelling area to think about. Again, I didn't witness the horrors of war myself, but I mean, I knew another guy recently who was a he was actually shot and was considered dead in Iraq. And he was revived, but he has since committed suicide.
Right. I mean, I had some buddies of mine that went to Vietnam, and some that didn't make it back, and a few that did, but didn't come back quite the same, for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, I it's interesting because I sometimes find it painful to read poetry of that period. You know, a lot of it is just is almost shrill. Some of it seems to me, because it was just like it was tearing the country apart so badly, and whether you were went or came back, I mean, it just was a nightmare for so many people. That I'm trying to remember a. I mean, like, for example, poets that could do what you did here, you know, in a sense, about Vietnam. I don't remember too much like that.
A lot of people don't even talk about it.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I've got a brother-in-law who was in Vietnam, and he never talks about it. But, I mean, my dad was a B-17 crewman in World War II, and he never talked about that. In fact, it was years later that one of my nieces found an article about a B-17 over Berlin that ended up a couple hundred feet off the ground above Holland and then crash landed in England. And my dad was on that plane.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow. 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 You know, so, yeah, that's true. I don't remember, I had an uncle that was, you know, very active in the military, but, anyway, I think that's a well done poem though, Tom. I like the way that ends up, and, let's do one more and then take another short break, and then we'll come back and finish with one. How do you feel about that?
We'll finish with the Villanelle?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Great, okay.
All right, this one's called Ballet Lesson. And again, I've got four daughters.
God bless you, sir.
Lily writhes, her face contorted from catching her finger in the car door. She is six, too young to know such hurt. She grips her hand, and her twisted face I see the pain of Dido, of Trojan women holding their fallen men, their dying sons. I kiss her hand, no cut, no blood. She wipes her eyes, forgets her grief. As we drive to class, she points out daffodils, dogwood, redbud, forsythia that bloom along this mountain road. Her pink-clad body and blonde hair bounce on the car seat. We follow the winding road to town, not looking too far ahead nor behind, but welcoming this warm, clear day. I pray she will transform the pain of practice, learn the plié, glissade, arabesque, to greet her life en point, to pirouette, to read and embrace in people's faces the centuries of grief, the yearnings, and yes, my little flower, to bloom.
I like that one, Belle.
Lily actually did the cover art for this chapter.
Oh, did she really? Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. So now, has Lily, then she's probably read the poem. She must be one of the ones that, unlike your sons, that...
yeah, the... No offense, but yeah, the daughters are much more receptive.
Boy, 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 boy.
Are your sons married?
Well, the first son is actually becoming a Navy officer in April. He's in Spain with his wife and daughter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he's bigger than me.
Right, you have to use other kinds of persuasion there, you know.
And the 21-year-old son is in the Navy Reserve, and he does everything to be like his brother. He just really likes his older brother, which is nice. But
that's good. They get along. That's you know, that's important.
But he's also bigger than me.
It's funny you mention that. My dad, at some point, where we're my older brother came over to lift weights, and we were lifting weights in the basement, and I hadn't seen my older brother work out. He hadn't worked out with me in about a year, and I put the weight on, and it was about 325 pounds, and I was about 185, and I said, I'm going to go ahead and, if you could spot me, I'm going to bench this. And he goes, you're all the way past 300? And I said, yeah. And he said, oh, wow. He goes, and my dad was kind of leaning in, and he goes, oh, no, I'm going to have to get a 2x4. He said...
Oh my God.
I get with a grip handle. He said, I need a grip handle on my 2x4.
All right. We're going to take a short break and come back and close with one final poem. And you're listening to The Poetry Show on the Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. This is Epic Radio, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. The Poetry Show is 7:30 to 9 a.m. on Mondays. And although we're not going to be here next Monday, I meant to... mention that we're going to be I'll be gone from this coming Friday through the following Thursday, I think, and in the meantime I think we'll mainly have probably automated Christmas music playing much of the time, but in any event, we'll be right back. The French chop, when I pop her clutch, woo, she blows my top. A quick change, really, you know what I mean. This baby of mine, she's no trailer queen. I'm so glad I don't have to walk no more. Walk, walk, walk no more. Cause I just got me a hot rod V8-4. Walk, walk, walk no more. Come on, baby, let's ride. Baby, baby. Yeah, yeah, baby, let's ride. Baby, baby. Come on, baby, let's ride. Baby, baby. Yeah, yeah, baby, let's ride. And welcome back to The Poetry Show, broadcasting here on the Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio Station. We're above the Four Seasons Bookstore here on German Street in Shepherdstown. Today's guest is Tom Donlan, a renowned local poet here, and very active in our, prominent in our active local poetry community. Around here, there's been a lot of poets in and out of Shepherdstown, and they don't mind talking to each other, which is also good. Welcome back, Tom, and I'd like you to do one more poem, if you could, for us to close out the program here. Thank you.
Okay, this is dedicated to John Case.
Thank you so much.
We had worked together on Villanelles in the past. And this poem is ironically called Why I Like the Villanelle. This rustic country song, deep as a well, thrives despite the claims that rhyme is dead, for beating hearts can never say farewell. Yes, repeated lines are hard to sell, but artfully done can rise like a loaf of bread, this rustic country song, deep as a well. One can hear the ocean in a shell, and feel the waves above an oyster bed, for beating hearts can never say farewell. It's fair to say it's tough to write them well, but souls need rhythmic music to keep them fed, this rustic country song deep as a well. You know it works if you feel inside a gazelle that leaps, your hair just standing on your head, for beating hearts can never say farewell. They're wrong who say they hear a funeral bell. They're drawn to it with a sing-songy dread. This rustic country song deep as a well, for beating hearts can never say farewell.
That is true. And there you've captured, you know, the appeal of a villanelle with the perfect resonance, and I've heard some very good ones over the years. And for a while, Janet, you know, favored me with a few of classic. Different poets have tried their hand at it, and of course, I did get sucked once into the Paradell, which was a Billy Collins, I think, joke about
an alleged form he claimed was a derivative of the villain hill, and which reduced, no matter how you did it, your last couple of lines of the poem were, you know, just gibberish, or at least indistinguishable from gibberish. And it took that before he realized, what, this can't be right, you know. But anyway, but I thought the, I think the Villanelle is a beautiful, it has a song like quality, but I think especially for reading aloud, it's just
sound. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's great. It's great radio poetry.
Okay? Yes, so, absolutely.
Anyway, well, thank you so much, Tom, for joining. Thank you for that poem. And I've always thought it was...
Thanks so much, Tom. I really good. Appreciate it.
Oh, there you go. Here you go. It was
great meeting you. Great stuff.
So we'll try to see if we can, you know, look to think of us at the... I can try to make the Bookend Poets, but Thursday nights are a little tough for me. If there's anybody else that, you know, if any of your fellow efforts want to get publicized and podcast and do all that, then, you know, happy to reserve a Monday here for them.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, just
or I can record off. Doesn't have to be Monday, but I can anywhere in this building like that. That's why you guys meet upstairs right here, don't you?
Yeah.
Because I can just take a microphone and a soundboard in there and plug it into my computer. You can do anything. You can do it anywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
So I mean, it's not anywhere in the building here. It becomes pretty easy to do. Let's
put it good that stuff.
Way. Right. Yeah. Well, the bookends. You remember the 40 some years of Georgia Lee McElhaney.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so Eric.
Has she passed away?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, she was on here a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I read her poems here in 2014.
That's right, you did.
Yeah,
that's
along right. with Grace Cavalieri and
right.
Ed's poems, Ed Zanizer.
Yeah, right. I know. Eating at Betty's or whatever. Yeah.
But I also, there's a Amber Decker is another local poetry person who's doing the domestic restaurant on the third Thursdays.
Oh, really? Okay.
In January.
Okay. Well, I need to get her contact. She's a third Thursday in January. She reads or she has a reading.
It's going to be a recurring third Thursday event, like bookends, but it's people reading.
Oh, I need to go down. Okay, I need to go down and get that, so then we could rebroadcast. That would be interesting to do too.
And also the Scheherazades, where we have been doing for years.
Right.
I think 6.5 years or something. The first Sunday readings. Where there's a group of poets, that would be the kind of place to do a recording, because there's no commenting on it. It's just read and then...
Right.
But that is going to end on January 1st, Sunday.
I hear Scheherazade is going to close down. Is that what's...
That's what Lisa Olney, the owner, is planning to do. Move on.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been there quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need a new venue for that type of, you know, restaurant environment where people just stand up and read.
Right. Okay. I don't know where that'll be, but you might have a meet in the little tonic shop down there with our local sorceress. What's her name? Ashley Davis there. she can make you think it's positive
again,
science.
Once again, I don't know if my mic's on, but once again, I'll just quote Lord of the Rings here and ask the sorceress, like Samwise Gamgee said to Gandalf, please don't turn me into anything unnatural.
No, she has potions there to solve.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a Chinese medicine thing going.
Good stuff.
But she's good at it.
Oh,
she is very good at it.
Yep.
And you know, I had Janet's husband Andy Mossholder, who's a doctor and works for the FDA, and he's listening to the program one day where she was on there and talking about the medicinal properties of some particular herb, and she also has a degree in biology, so she can do it. And but you know, and Andy kept telling me, you know, I was listening to that and it sounded really good, but I just am not sure about, you know, about the homeopathic, you know, path here. But anyway, I want to thank you so much for joining. I want to see if they actually put us up, have a poetry show at the, she's good. You know, she might actually dig that. She might actually,
it'd be fun.
She has a partner there, Carmela, who's was an attorney, I believe. And now they're both into this Chinese medicine thing, but. I know she brought in teas for us when she used to come in monthly over at the other station. Mm-hmm. But now, before they got their whole shop set up now. And I can't deny they had an interesting effect. Okay, so She might have put some booze in it. It could have been. Anyway, other candidates for future poetry shows. Thank you so much. This is Epic Radio, and it's late, but everything comes next.